Have you ever had a good teacher? What made them good? Were they knowledgeable? Compassionate? Did you have fun in their classrooms? Did they challenge you? Inspire you? Make you feel safe? Do you think that they knew they were good at their jobs? And how much of their work was behind the scenes? Welcome to Teacher Voice, the podcast dedicated to bringing you stories by teachers about teaching. My name is Brittany Franskoviak. I teach high school biology in Central Maryland. I'm a senior fellow at the Knowles Teacher Initiative, and I serve as an associate editor for Kaleidoscope, the official journal of Knowles. Today, a conversation about good teaching. What is it? How can we recognize it? What does it mean to aspire to be a good teacher anyway? And how can teachers sustain themselves when there's always more for us to do? For this conversation, we bring together three teachers who have recently published articles in Kaleidoscope exploring these questions.
My name's Maria Chow. I teach biology and environmental science in Cincinnati, Ohio. It's my second year teaching and the first year at this school. Last year I taught in Boston, Massachusetts.
I'm Heidi Park. I teach chemistry and physics in Chicago, Illinois. This is my fifth year teaching and my fifth year at this school.
I'm Keisha Steenson. I teach biology in Colorado. After 6 years in an urban district, this is my first year at a suburban school in Lafayette, Colorado.
All of you wrote pieces that seem to come from a place of frustration in your settings or in your teaching practice. Can you start out by describing some of the frustration you were feeling that led you to write these articles?
This was after my third year teaching. I was thinking about the question of, like, what's a good teacher? I had a really rough year in some ways. I was really kind of exhausted and burned out. And I realized in some conversations with a bunch of people, I wasn't really sure what I meant when I said I want to be a good teacher. So thinking about how we talk about wanting to be good teachers, we talk about good teachers versus bad teachers, and I just kind of wanted to figure out for myself what that meant, like what I thought that meant and what other people thought that meant. And so it was me trying to explore and unpack that question a little bit.
That sounds pretty similar to what I was thinking. So I feel like I was just reflecting on this idea of feeling unsuccessful. So I think if I look back to when I was a student, I think I felt pretty successful at what I was doing. Like I knew how to play the game of school and I did it well. So honestly, it was kind of a bit of a shock to feel like a horrible teacher. I think my first year teaching, I thought the job was impossible for me, just me. And then I think after a couple of years, I started to realize that a lot of the challenges I was facing were not about me as an individual, they were more systemic. And that just led me to feel kind of overwhelmed by what was going on. And so I think that led me to this idea of defining what I was in control of and what I could potentially do to make myself feel a little bit better.
What Keisha's saying also resonated with me. The hard work equaling success formula that I was used to in my past was no longer applicable in my teaching, especially as a first year teacher. With so much constantly happening in my classroom, I really was focusing on things that were going wrong and struggling to see anything that was going right. So it took a lot of work with coaches and veteran teachers to gain some perspective around what it meant to fail and to grow in my classroom.
So Heidi, in your piece, you confront head on the question of good teaching, right? Because you sent out this survey where you just really straightforwardly asked people questions about what it means to be a good teacher and what good teaching looks like. Can you talk about what has stuck with you from the data that you compiled from that survey?
I just posted this question to social media. I didn't really know what to expect, and I got a lot. So it was just one question. Like, in your own words, what do you think when you hear the phrase good teaching or that person is a good teacher? And some of the things that stuck out were, other teachers often, or, people who identified as teachers, identified things that really lined up with what I had considered good teaching, things like empowering students to develop and explain ideas, and developing and designing effective learning experiences, kind of creating that space where students can learn content. I felt like non-teachers focused more on what the teachers were doing, like explaining things well, so more focused on the teacher than on the students. But I do feel like there was like a lot of stuff that came out of the data. So when I sifted through it, it was things like a teacher should be enthusiastic and know their content well. They should be able to personalize and adapt instruction. They should be able to engage all of their students and challenge them to think critically. Also care for their students, communicate well, collaborate, reflect. And if you're just faced with that like list of things, it seems like a lot and can seem like super overwhelming.
That really is quite the list of qualities and dispositions and talents that teachers are supposed to be able to master in order to think of themselves as good teachers. And it's really easy to feel overwhelmed as an educator actually staring that list down. I mean, this is a lot without even really considering all of the things that actually eat at our time and our energy sort of during our school day as we're working with kids, as we're working with other adults, as we're trying to make sure that we're taking care of all of our various professional responsibilities in addition to classroom instruction. In your former department, Keisha, I know that you were constantly really preoccupied with thinking about how much you and your teachers were trying to deal with and how you might be able to find ways to make that sustainable for you and your staff.
Yeah, so I feel like the idea of time is real. Like there's a physical limit to how much you can do. And I think a lot of what I was being asked to do is stuff that in isolation, I think could potentially add small amounts to my teaching. But when all of it was asked all at once, it was to the point that it was actually taking away time that I felt like I needed to focus a little bit more on what was going on in my classroom. So it was initiatives like calling all of your parents before conferences. Like, you don't think that would take that much time, but with 150 students, that would take all of my planned periods for a week. And then thinking about what I was actually doing in my classroom or thinking about my interactions with actual students sort of took the back burner. And I think my experience was so focused on doing all of these things and a lot less focused on why we're doing that or what the outcome should be, that it became more about a checklist of things to do and less about what that meant for students. And I think what I really wanted to be thinking about, wanted to be working on, is the idea of what would work with my students and what was going to be most authentic to me in my classroom. And because I was spending all this time working on initiatives, I was super grumpy. I was really exhausted. I think my emotional state was such that I wasn't my best self with my students either. And I was like starting to become a teacher that I really didn't want to be, where I felt negative all of the time. I also felt like I didn't have any sense of control or autonomy about what I was spending my time doing. And because I didn't have any control, it also didn't feel sustaining at any level. And I think that incredible level of frustration and feeling overwhelmed and feeling completely incapable of doing what I needed to do is sort of what led me to start thinking about what would actually make me feel better and make me feel more connected to what I eventually wanted my teaching to be like, this idea of really connecting with students. And that's what led me to try to do strengths-based observations with my colleagues, because I had an opportunity to go in and see what was going well. And just focusing on that idea of the positive and what was working in classrooms ended up being pretty helpful for me. And I think it did some other things for my colleagues as well, but I think it was something that was really helpful for me. Also, looking back at it, I think I'm at a new school this year, and I do realize a lot of the frustrations I was experiencing were pretty context dependent. The school that I'm at now has a lot fewer initiatives in place, and there is a little bit more focus on my classroom, but I know it's definitely not the only school district in the country, the one that I came from, that had that challenge with too many things on the theoretical plate.
Maria, in your piece, you identified some struggles that are going to be really familiar to anyone who ever had a first year of teaching. When I read it, I just really empathized and remembered what it was like to be in that phase of my own teaching. And I thought you did such a nice job kind of, phrasing all of the frustrations and anxieties that go into trying to figure out what you're doing when you're in your first year. And it sounds like you were really lucky to be in an environment that offered a fair amount of structured, supportive coaching. How do you feel like your interactions with your coach helped you gain some perspective on your practice in that first year?
My coaching experience in my first year was really essential to any feeling of success that I had that year. I, as many teachers do, came into the classroom with really high expectations for myself and for my students, and not really feeling prepared to handle how it feels when things don't go the way that you plan. In one of my very first meetings with my teaching coach last year, my coach said, or quoted, you seemed really frustrated, even though there were many good conversations happening between you and your students, and between your students with each other. And that's exactly how I was feeling, like always frustrated, always overwhelmed. And it really blinded me to seeing many of the good things that were actually happening in my classroom while I was focusing on all these negative things, especially classroom management issues. Noticing these things and working with my coach allowed me to become really reflective about my practice and get less overwhelmed when those like negative things or the things that I didn't want to be happening would happen. I learned to stay calm and deal with kind of like students that were off task or lesson plans that derail, or any number of things that can make a lesson go wrong, and realize like it's not a statement about me as a teacher, but that like this is an opportunity for me to reflect and grow in my practice. And it also became really essential to the way that I approach my teaching now. I'm really reflective about my practice, and even at my new school where I don't have as much coaching in place, I've kind of built in time for myself to reflect and think about the way that I'm teaching so that I can continue to grow as a teacher.
I think that resonates a ton with my experience as well. I do feel like it's almost human nature to be able to identify shortcomings. That's just so much easier to do, but it's really challenging to be able to identify what you can actually do about those shortcomings. And I feel like you have to have some sense of hope in order to do that and in order to move forward. And even though I had a little bit more experience when I was doing these strengths-based observations, I think more than anything, they were powerful for me. So not just the person hearing about their own strengths, but also me going into a classroom and looking for strengths, made me more aware of, first of all, like my department and how great some of the people I was working with was, but also some of the things that were going well in my classroom, it's somehow easier to notice them in other people. And so when I was able to look at others and see what was going well with them, I was more reminded of some of the stuff that was going well in my classroom. Some of the strengths-based observations that I did, I actually did with a teacher who it was her first year at the school as well. And she talked about really similar things to what you'd been saying. This idea of like just focusing on the positive for a little while actually made it much more possible to move forward in what was going wrong. And that like changing that mindset from that sense of there's too much here, it's impossible, to actually there's a lot going well. And going from that place is just so much more actionable.
In my mind, it really is a shift in mindset. As we approach becoming better at what we do. It's the same thing that we ask of our students all the time. We ask them to fail and try again, rather than wallowing and giving up. And we have to do the same thing in our teaching practice. We have to see small successes instead of kind of like making our mistakes all that we can see.
So for both Maria and Keisha, having this supportive professional environment had a really profound impact on a sense of success in the classroom and with students. And Heidi, when you collected your data, one of the things that you noticed was that people who identified as teachers included collaboration in their definitions of good teaching, but your non-teacher responders didn't. And you've talked about that feeling significant to you. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, I think, you know, thinking about the data and just what that means, I think a lot of times people, like non-teachers, just don't see the collaborative nature of teaching and like how collaborative it could be or even should be. I think a lot of times in the media, we see these portrayals of that one teacher that swoops in and saves the day, right? but in my experience also, like, that wasn't the case. Like, I had a really supportive team, like, that I worked with to collaborate on curriculum, like, almost every day my first couple years teaching, and I still have that team. It's just, like, the people have shifted. And so I think having that experience and also seeing these responses and how important teachers find collaboration, it just made me realize, like, that long list of things that people, like, said were part of good teaching is not something that I should have to do on my own, and realistically I can't do it on my own. And just realizing, like, we do have this resource of experienced educators who can help us get perspective, who can help us troubleshoot, you know, who can just help when we are kind of in that mode of everything is going wrong, like, I can't, like, I just want to give up, and just kind of shift us out of that a little bit. And I don't know that we always draw upon that resource very well.
How do our perceptions of teaching and our own teaching practice impact our students?
I feel like when I first think about this question, I'm reminded, like, a teacher prep program, we talked about the idea of an effective filter to students, and there was, like, some image of, like, a window, and, like, when the window's up, they can't learn anything because they're too hyped up with this emotional state. And I kind of think there's an effective filter to teaching as well. This idea that when you're so strung out on this emotional, like, challenge, it's really hard to do your best teaching as well. And I think back to what Heidi was saying, looking at the idea of collaboration, I feel like not only does it help you draw on resources when you're down, but it also creates this community that goes towards what it means to be human. And I think as teachers, we put so much of ourselves into our work that creating that, like, human connection seems so important. And when I'm having a bad day, I'm definitely not my best self teaching, and drawing on that collaboration to feel a little bit more supported, not just in my practice, but also as a person and in my emotional life, seems important as well.
So something I appreciated in the most recent Kaleidoscope issue was Alex Steinkamp's piece. I forget the title right now. But it was the idea of, like, being forgiving of ourselves, and this idea, like, if we hold ourselves, it's good for us to hold ourselves to this high standard of what we are aiming for as a teacher. But if we never, like, if we are so focused on, like, being that perfect teacher that we have in our head, then we're gonna never, like, we'll realize we can't ever get there, and then it's like this, like, oh, I'm just gonna give up. And I feel like Alex came to the conclusion that, like, you would totally be doing ourselves and our students a huge disservice, and I 100% agree with that. I think, like, you know, Keisha and Maria were saying earlier, this idea of growth mindset, like, the idea that, yeah, we can always improve, but, like, today, right now, it's okay if I'm not trying to improve everything that I know could be improved. And I will work on this thing that I can improve right now, or that I'm focused on right now, and the other things, you know, it's okay if I'm not that perfect teacher every minute of every day, and I can't be. Like, I will drive myself crazy if I try to do that.
One of my favorite things about teaching is the conviction that my day-to-day work is really urgent and important. But sometimes teaching can feel high stakes, and it's easy to become a bit overwhelmed by that, especially when I know that I could always be better at my job. What do you think about how we can become comfortable with our imperfection when this work can feel so high stakes?
Yeah, and I think even that idea of imperfection feels really different depending on the mood that I'm in. Like, sometimes imperfection seems like this really exciting opportunity for growth, and I wanted a job that was challenging. I didn't want to be bored. And when I'm feeling good, imperfection seems like where I want to be. But when I'm feeling bad and when my emotional state is not good, like, any sort of imperfection feels almost like evidence that I must be a failure as a human being, not just in my teaching, like, every aspect of my life. And that's why I really think that actions that improve morale and improve that sense of community really are so critical, because it allows that inevitable imperfection that obviously is going to exist to become more of a growth opportunity and less of a crushing defeat.
The field of teaching has probably one of the steepest learning curves that I can think of. And for some reason, we come into this field expecting to be as good on our first day of teaching as perhaps we'd like to be on our last day of teaching. And it's really unrealistic for all the demands that we've already talked about and just the way that learning and growth work. I remember back last year when I went to the NABT conference and I was talking with Jim Clark, and he's a veteran science teacher and one of the district coordinators in San Lorenzo, California. And I was expressing some frustration around my teaching and feeling overwhelmed and feeling like I was never successful. And one thing he said to me that really resonated with me was, "You shouldn't be a good teacher yet. It takes like 10 years to be a good teacher." And that really hit home because it kind of came back to this idea of what it takes to grow and giving yourself time to really do that. As teachers, we have to be okay with the fact that our practices will be imperfect for a really long time. But it's okay. We still build relationships with our students, and we still do the best that we can.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know if my practice will ever be perfect. One of my colleagues is, I think, in her 12th or 13th year teaching, and she, every year, is looking for ways to continue to improve. You know, like, I don't think she thinks of herself as a perfect teacher, even though I really look up to her. And I think, like, that's something, like, you know, Keisha's saying that, like, I really enjoy about teaching. It's like every year is a little different. Every year is an opportunity to grow and improve. And I don't know that I will ever make it and be done in my development as a teacher. And I, like, on, like Keisha said, like, on my good days, I think that's great and amazing. And so I think that's just also something important to remember as teachers. It's like, no, this really should be more of like a growth profession, and we shouldn't hold ourselves or each other to this impossible standard, but recognize that we're moving towards this continual growth.
So why is it important for us to sort of keep having and keep making public these dialogues around what makes good teaching?
Yeah, so I mean, I think we all have an idea of what a good teacher is. And I think our students and the families that we work with and our colleagues, our administrators, they all have this idea themselves of what good teaching is. And I think if we never talk about it publicly, we are not, like, we may have very different definitions of what a good teacher is. I think some of my students who are used to a more traditional classroom think that I need to lecture more. Like, they ask me to lecture more because that's what they think of as good teaching, as someone who can explain things really well verbally. Whereas my perception of a good teacher is one that is getting the students to think about things themselves and develop their own understanding. And that doesn't have to involve me standing at the front of the classroom, like, just telling them stuff. And if we never talk about what good teaching is, or like what they mean when they're like, this is a good teacher, we're not having the same conversation.
Yeah, I think there's definitely that to explain it to other people externally. I also think that there's something to be said for having a conversation to help with my own learning as well. I think sometimes bouncing ideas off of other people and making those ideas public is the best way to sort of solidify what I'm thinking and why I'm thinking it. So from a very selfish standpoint, having teaching conversations makes me a better version of myself. And Brittany, a while ago, you mentioned this idea that teaching feels high stakes. And I really do think it is pretty high stakes. So I think the reason I was drawn to this profession is because of the potential power it can have to make the world a better place. But that definitely is not going to happen overnight, and it's not going to happen without me continually pushing my own thinking and having these public thought partners to do that with. And I think by discussing what makes good teaching and playing around with that idea, we're able to participate more fully in, like, the really challenging task of bringing our best selves to a profession that really does deserve us continually working on doing that.
From the list that was collected, it's clear that people see good teaching differently. I think the other reason it's good to discuss good teaching is because, especially for new teachers, it's good to hear in a backwards kind of way that other people struggled too, and that you can get there, and you can do it. And like, it doesn't mean that we're ever going to be perfect, but that like the challenges are real, but they seem bigger in the beginning, and it gives us kind of a mindset for handling the many challenges that we're going to face as career-long teachers.
So I'm actually drinking tea right now, and there's like a little quote on my tea bag, and I just noticed it, and it seems like too perfect not to mention. So my tea bag quote says, "Even though the perfect might be impossible, it does not make it any less worth striving for."
It's really hard to follow up a tea bag quote that is quite as good as that one. Yeah, thanks for your time.
Thank you. It was really fun.
It was a really nice conversation.
Yeah, thanks everyone. It was a fun conversation.
Heidi Park's article, "What Makes Good Teaching?" and Keisha Steenson's article, "Finding Sustainability and Strengths," were both originally published in the 16-17 fall-winter issue of Kaleidoscope. You can find Maria Chow's piece, "Being Okay with Imperfection," in the 2017 spring-summer issue of Kaleidoscope. In this episode, you heard Heidi reference a piece by Alex Steinkamp. His piece is called "Self-Talk and Sustainability," and it was published in the most recent fall-winter issue of Kaleidoscope. To find all of these articles and all of the Kaleidoscope archives, visit knowlesteachers.org/kaleidoscope. Kaleidoscope and Teacher Voice are supported by the Knowles Teacher Initiative.